And we're recording. Look at that. Okay. Got to remember not to swear too much on today's episode. I just got a feeling we'll get carried away. We are a family show after all. Well, 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 there we f***ing go, ladies and gentlemen.
What did you say about swearing?
Welcome to this week's Under the Abbey Stand. Fergie, Dara, Barry, your boys took one hell of a beating. A 2-0 Derby Day win sees the U's close the gap to survival to 0 points. A sentence that seemed unimaginable 17 days ago. Boys, here we go. George, not that much to talk about this week, is there really?
Just a couple of bits. Firstly, that we're sat in a room together, which is nice. I can see Tom. He's just there.
It's
can reach out and touch Tom. I might touch him during the pod. Might be one of those pods.
That's out of context, Jordan Warland.
Give us a cuddle, Tom. Your cuddles are a platform. That's gonna get clipped.
Yeah.
No, loads to talk about, mate. Loads to talk about.
Lots to talk
just
about.
How easy Saturday was. Can't get my head around it.
Not a sentence that I thought we'd be saying last week when we were prepping for this week's preview in this game. The other voice you heard there is Tom Walker. Tom, how is that Kool-Aid tasting, mate?
Yeah, a nice big sugary hit to bring me back to life after what was quite the day,
quite
of,
the
of celebrating, shall we say.
I've not been on the panel for months. It's normally me and Tom, just the two of us on a Sunday.
Yeah, quite in your bleak little grief hole.
Yeah, exactly that. One-on-one, get it done as quickly as you can. So I'm on the panel purely for the Kool-Aid. Nice big glass, ice, coaster for it.
Yeah.
Pour me a glass, Julian.
I'm drinking a lovely pint of the stuff right now, and it is tasting wonderful. That's also answered the first question we got in from Craig, which was just quite simply, how's the hangover? And the answer to that is not great.
Tom's not looking chirpy. Considering we've just beaten our biggest rivals for the first time in 25 years, you do not look chirpy.
Yeah, I'll be really quite honest. When I woke up this morning, I felt absolutely horrendous.
But what a professional, you're here.
Like the whole amber side of Cambridgeshire, I can imagine, felt exactly the same this morning. Well, let's get into it, shall we? I mean, this is going to be one of the funnest pods of the season, I think. I mean, as George said, there's so much to talk about, but we've got to start in the obvious place, haven't we? And that's previewing Wickham. No, obviously. George, let's start with you. Like, as the elder statesman on the panel here, and I mean that, you know, in the dignified man that you are, sort of, you know, a sage old man, how does that compare to derbies of the past? Obviously, me and Tom, that was our first home derby at the Abbey. First in 25 years.
Wow, you're discounting the pizza trophy wins.
I am discounting the pizza trophy wins, as the club seem to have done as well, by the way. But how does it compare to derbies of the past?
Like I said, it's been 25 years, so it's hard to remember, isn't it? It makes it certainly feel a lot sweeter because it's been such a long time. I think the obvious one when you think of Cambridge wins over Borough is at London Road. You know, Dublin scored a hat trick. We put five past them. That's the peak. That's the pinnacle. But for me, as someone in my mid-30s, I would have to say that that's probably the best one that I can remember. You know, the last time we beat them 1-0, Michael Kidd goal, seeing the posh fans getting rained on and the old allotment end was pretty, pretty sweet. I'm pretty sure that victory sort of all but ruled out their playoff chances. So that was sweet. But I think, like you guys mentioned on the last pod, just the significance of Saturday's derby for both teams. Like, I think it's been a long time since it's been hugely significant for both teams, if possibly ever. Getting the result just automatically shoots it right up to the very top, just under that sort of that 5-0 win at London Road. And it's bizarre, isn't it? Because it wasn't that long ago we were looking at this game and saying we might get relegated by this lot.
Well, it was not that long ago that Tom said he'd do a 10 stretch just to make sure that they don't relegate us, I think.
But the thing I can't quite get my head around about Saturday is, you know, not only did we beat them, which is a big thing to comprehend given their current form, it's put us right back in the survival picture, which is huge in itself. But the big thing that I'm struggling to get my head over is just how straightforward, yeah. how professional, dare I say, at times, how easy we made it.
That
was a weird, weird feeling. I can't remember sort of winning a big game at the Abbey. I'm over-egging it here now. I don't want to say that easy, but winning a big game at the Abbey where like everything kind of went our way. Like we managed defending well, defending set pieces. We stopped, you know, very good attacking players. Mm-hmm. It just seemed that we'd done research. We'd set up in the right way. Tactically and physically, we were more up for it than Borough. And that's why we won on Saturday. We genuinely wanted it more. And it's a long time, derby or not, that I can remember us winning like a really crucial game just because we wanted it more.
Yeah. It's that sort of like, you know, we talked about it last week, needing to play the game on emotion rather than sort of logic, which is something that I think Tom was saying last week, which is exactly what I thought we did. Just before we get right into the game, Tom, a question from Matt Caspel, actually. How does it actually rank?
Here we go.
It's actually quite a serious one as well. So how does it rank amongst your all-time favourite games at the Abbey full stop? Not even just posh games. I mean, obviously, that's your first, that's my first posh game at the Abbey. We might be over-egging it here because there's been some, you know, Stevenage at home in 2008, Halifax at home in the playoff, both in the playoff semis. So obviously, you know, two that come to mind. But where does it rank for you?
Yeah, probably right at the top, to be honest.
Number one.
Yeah, I think so.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Where does it rank in games that we've won where you've missed the goal?
Yeah, should we address that now?
Should we get that in? We've got to get that in.
Let's get this in now.
Should we address the elephant in the room?
Well, I mean, to be fair to you, you were definitely not the only one who missed that goal. There was that NRE bar when I went down was very busy.
I still think Tom Walker was closer to Harrison Dunk than the Borough centre-backs were, though.
Yeah.
And that's saying something.
Yeah, I like at Newcastle, obviously famously, the goal that Ironside scored was not in or near the half, sort of half-time period.
It wasn't excusable,
like,
really.
It was like 15 minutes into the second half or something. I actually feel kind of more vindicated for this one. You know, firstly, you quite rightly say, there was a massive queue of people at the bar, which is fair enough. You know, it was deep into the stoppage time at the end of the first half. And I just assumed that nothing was going to happen. And it was quite funny watching a queue of people sprint towards the front of the NRE. We can add that one to Giant Size goal at Newcastle. I'm sure that'll never get brought up again.
I was going to say, good thing is, Tom, you won't live that one down. So,
and obviously, thankfully, we did score a second one. So I got my pound of flesh, so to speak. I guess in these moments, I have to be a bit diplomatic and say it's just all about the 3 points.
It is. Doesn't matter if you see it or not. No, it's all about the team. Let's start with that man, shall we? Let's go into the game. Let's start with Harrison Dunk. When we put a call out for questions before this podcast, I think the first three from Elliot, Simon and Daniel were all, where is the Dunk statue being built? George, it's kind of hard to like, you know, to sort of sum up this guy. I mean, there's something so poetic and poignant about him being the fella that puts us in front against Posh in a game of this magnitude, not just as a derby, but as obviously, you know, as a massive game at both ends of the table. What, like, you know, is this squad a bit more, is he more important to the squad than sometimes we give him credit for?
Oh, I think undoubtedly. And year on year, at the start of the season, you never think you're going to be in a position where you're saying that. Coming back to the questions about where should the statue be built? It's weird, isn't it? We don't have any statues at the ground at all. Surely we've got to address that. Surely there is some sort of legend that deserves a statue and not just a T-bar named after them. But, I mean, what was it? It's 452nd appearance. Like, already you're running out of things to say about a guy that's doing that. It's, like, already a legend. Like, there's literally nothing more you can do to cement your place in folklore and in history of the club. Oh, yeah, no, I'll just score against Borough.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we meant to say? Are we meant to come onto his podcast and say? What an absolute legend. I mean, and he just booted the ball away as he celebrated as well. Like, it's just brilliant.
And he was tucking it past one of his best mates, I think, right? I think Norris and him, I saw them have a big embrace at the end. A bit more on Will
more
Norris
about
maybe.
Him later. But
I absolutely love that celebration because it was like just a proper like fucking have it.
Did you see the video on Twitter? Someone who's like, I don't know if he works for the club or whatever, but it's kind of in that bottom corner of the main stand, like not actually in the stand, but on kind of like on the ground where the ambulance and stuff is. And when the goal goes in, you get like a really good view of it in the video. And Marvin runs onto the pitch and starts jumping around. And some steward has to like restrain him. Come on, man. Let Marvin go.
He's a mascot. That's literally what he's supposed to do. Mental. A bit of overzealous stewarding is sort of, you know.
I'm glad no one held Smith back from celebrating in front of the Borough fans. That just makes it a little bit
sweeter. The guy absolutely lives for doing things like that.
he's realised which set of fans he's meant to shush now. Mm. So I've got to say,
there was a moment after his goal where he obviously celebrated in front of the NRE, then ran.
Yes.
In the end, he ran towards Bonner. Mm. And there was a moment where I thought, is he going to pelt down the other end of the pitch and really give it to you? If scoring is essentially the goal that wins the derby, it doesn't give you legend status, then probably doing something like that does.
Fair
credit.
Bit of a word on Harrison Dunk from you, Tom, just before we move on. I mean,
form since he's come back.
I was just about to say, you know, he's unbeaten since he's come back, past four games.
Coincidence match?
I mean, we've taken 25% of our entire league total in the past four games. When we talk about the sort of relegation picture a bit later on, there's a few other stats similar to that we'll talk about. But those are, you know, like you say, coincidence or not. That's, you know, the four games since Dunk's been back from injury.
I think probably in terms of the actual results, like, there is maybe a little bit of it that's a bit of a coincidence, because performances had definitely sort of improved to an extent before that game at Port Vale, when obviously came back into the team.
And it's also important to remember that, like, Seddon played the majority of the game against Bolton and played really well in that five. So, like, it's, you know, it's obviously been a bit more of a team effort than just one person.
I think there's definitely something to be said for having someone that has that sort of calm head in the team. You know, you look at Bennett, and he's sort of like buzzing around all over the place and getting involved everywhere. And, you know, obviously we've got Bennett Ryan Bennett, that is, and Michael Morrison, who are obviously very experienced, but Dunk's just a kind of steady presence in there. I mean, it's probably a conversation we should have had after his 450th appearance, really, because he's obviously a massive milestone, and probably, you would guess, he's in with a really, really good shout of breaking that all-time appearance record, which, you know, it's just a massive thing. And obviously, you know, scoring the goal in the derby is obviously, you know, there's no better reason than that to kind of have a conversation with Harrison Dunk. There's a lot of things that are really impressive about him, and have been really impressive about his time with the club. I think probably the first one is just simply the way that he's kept coming back, because there have been, across the, what is it now, sort of 12 years that he's been with the club, there have been a lot of times where it looked like he either wouldn't stay on or wasn't going to be sort of part of the team. And you always have it at the end of the season where he ends up being a regular fixture in the team. It's like, it doesn't matter who comes into, you know, you look at it. It was
a touch of the Coulsons about it, right?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it was supposed to be obviously Houndstrip in that role. That's obviously not quite worked out. So Harrison's there, and he obviously performs to the level that means he keeps his place just on merit rather than kind of just because there isn't anyone else. But the other thing I think that is really impressive, and obviously this isn't a new thing, but his game has just developed so much.
Yeah.
I think, you know, right at the start of his career, he was obviously this, like, really kind of flying, exciting winger. And clearly injuries have taken their toll a little bit, which means his game had to adapt. He's just done that really well. And I think to do that while actually playing at a higher level and getting better, that's something that's really impressive. And, you know, he's obviously not known so much now for his goal scoring. But, yeah, I mean, if you know, spending more than a decade and hundreds of appearances at a football club, promotions, cut runs, if that stuff wasn't all, you know, that's going to make you a legend, then definitely scoring what is ultimately the winner in our first victory over Posh for 20 odd years, that is an absolutely mental thing to go and do. Like,
sometimes football just writes its own stories, doesn't it? It's just like, it's almost like someone's written that, like, all the players.
Yeah, and it's nice that narrative is running through, because Greg Taylor, God bless him, has kind of lost 2 years of his career, right? You know, he's not quite managed to step up to League One. Not all his own fault. He's had injuries. I think we're all kind of at the conclusion that he moves on in the summer, and we love him and we wish him well. It's nice then that the other elder statesman, Dunk, has not had that same curtailing of his story just yet. The fact that he has been able to sort of make his way into the squad this season and last, and just that moment scoring against Borough, just another sort of nugget in his anthology with the club. It's pretty special.
It's a bit like you with the podcast, really, isn't it? Making that step up to League One. You're adaptable, versatile, you know, a three-man pod, a two-man pod.
Hey, I went through the dark months of one-on-ones with Tom. We're through it.
And, right, mate. Yeah. Bit harsh. It's not that bad.
I'm basically saying that Tom and I have steered us through into this sort of survival charge.
Yeah, you have. You've been there commentating, as we all have, unfortunately, along the way for what has been, for the majority of it, a pretty depressing time. But, you know, thank God this month, the last four games have given us something not just to hope for, because it's a bit more than hope now. It's obviously, you know, we've cut the gap to 0 points now. It's a realistic chance. But let's come on to that more general stuff a little bit later on. And we'll talk about a few other players. And one guy that, I mean, I think, right, Harrison Dunk rightly got man of the match. But it's pretty mad to me that Conor McGrandles, I don't know what else he'd have to do to get a man of the match, because what a performance that was from him. What did you think, George?
Has he won a player?
I don't think he's actually won one yet.
I think it's a conspiracy, because he arguably should have won about five or six.
It's a question we had from Cam's True Blue, which is an interesting handle. I don't think that's the blue side of Cambridgeshire. But he said, what does man of the match McGrandles have to do to be awarded the award?
I mean, player of the season, Conor McGrandles. It's been quite the signing.
You've stolen my hot take there. I was gonna come in with that, but I'll leave that one to you.
Well, he had to step up, didn't he? Because other player of the season candidate, Lloyd Jones, obviously missed out on Saturday, and that was a real concern before we'd even kicked off. I thought, oh, no pace at the back, we're done for. But Bennett and Morrison marshals their front line expertly. But a lot of that came from the help that was in front of them. And as great as McGrandles has been, you know, he's been really refreshing. He chases things down. He's good on the ball. He's good with deliveries. But the other great thing about him is he is allowing other players to also then be better. Tom, you and I spoke about this a few weeks ago, but McGrandles' role, the impact it has on Digby has been huge. You know, Digby was like spreading himself really thinly for a lot of this season, and we weren't seeing performances or levels from Digby. Shout out to Digby, by the way, who I think on Saturday went over, what was it, 4,000 minutes or whatever.
Oh, was it?
For the season, yeah.
That's the sort of research we do.
Yeah.
Something like 4,000 or something minutes.
But no, it must be more than that. But anyway, like he's like the most appearances for us, Digby. I think he's appeared in every one. But McGrandles has allowed Digby to focus on what he's better at. And moving back to that sort of 4-2-3-1, It's just all coming together, isn't it? You know, you've got those two sort of deeper lying players. One focuses more on the defending. One focuses more on sort of closing down. You know, they're clear in who's doing what. Someone's not trying to cover the other role and things like that. So, yeah, it's been exactly what Charlton must have wanted from a loan out. Getting someone, getting minutes in them and getting form into them. I just hope they've given up on him and he might be up for grabs in the summer.
I had a little look through what their fans were saying about him this morning, on Twitter, and they were saying that obviously he's had injury problems since he's been there, but also when he has played, he hasn't actually played that well for them at all. Like they're really unimpressed by him, and they'd be pretty happy to sort of get him off their books, because I think he's got quite a long contract there. But Tom, it's a question from David that we got actually, which was, are we going to try and get McGrandles on a perm next season? Bonner said they've been tracking him for a long time, or do you think he might cost too much? I think he's got 2 years left on his Charlton deal, so might be a bit of a pricey one. Obviously, you know, Charlton will know how important he has been for us at the end of this season. I think we can all assume this question is sort of, if we stay in League One, I don't think he's the sort of player that's going to make a drop into League Two. He seems far too good. But Tom, what do you reckon? Because it seems like the exact sort of player, exactly as George just said there, that we should have signed in the summer to play alongside Digby, really. And I know that, and I know there's May's injury to contend with as well, but I'd always thought we'd go for that sort of player next to Digby in the summer. Would you snap him up for next season if the opportunity arised?
Yeah, definitely. I'd love it.
As well as May.
Get that checkbook open, Tom.
Yeah. I just want to be very clear, I'm not paying for that. I think, like, obviously his impact has been massive, and I think probably, you know, I guess Jordan mentioned it there, like Lloyd Jones is the obvious contender for player of the season, just he's been here the whole time, has been sort of the best player even throughout the sort of more difficult moments. But McGrandles, I think, if it wasn't for that, would probably be my shout for player of the season. I think he's been so steady, and I said it a couple of weeks ago that I felt like he was a player who's basically going to put in like 7 out of 10 performances every week, but Saturday was probably like near on 10 out of 10, like near on a perfect performance. But yeah, I mean, in terms of going forward, clearly he's not going to drop down. So this is all very dependent on us staying in the division. But I feel like there's probably a deal to be done there. Like, I get that he's obviously performed very well with us, but you got to look at it in the context that Charlton are having probably not the ideal season that they'd have liked. They obviously didn't last season either. So their ambition is going to be to, I guess, compete somewhere towards the top end of the league next season. And I'm not saying McGrandles isn't good enough for that, but if he's been deemed sort of surplus to requirements this year, in a year where they're sort of competing around mid-table, then you think if they want to improve on that, they're probably going to be looking at players like McGrandles, who maybe haven't featured much, and thinking, can we move them on elsewhere? And you know, obviously, if they can get in like a transfer fee from us and obviously, you know, basically lose his wages, and then that's probably not a bad thing for them. And sometimes these transfers don't have to be like, we're going out and taking like a really important player from another team. Sometimes it's just be a move that just kind of suits everyone. McGrandles gets more minutes. He's a key player in a team that's hopefully competing in League One. And, you know, Charlton obviously allowed to go out and then obviously maybe do things with their squad that they'd like to. So it's possibly a deal to be done there. The concern, I guess, is the finance of it, because he's on, I think, a relatively long contract there. So I think at least another couple of years. So you'd think there'd be a decent sized fee involved. But, I mean, injuries aside, I know it's obviously a big conversation. It's something that's impacted him a lot this season. But, like, it's another one of those signings which, to me, is almost kind of risk-free. Because, you know, you've got the best possible sort of, it's almost like a job interview sort of thing. You know, like he's literally like a trial run, and we know what we're going to get. So if there's a fee there, you can pretty well know that you're going to get at least some sort of return on it. Obviously, that's barring the possibility of sort of injuries coming up. But yeah, I mean, if there is any opportunity to do it, I'm sure that's something that we would be interested in. I'm sure it's something that we can try and make happen. As well as that, there'll probably be other clubs maybe looking into him and thinking, well, this guy's done well at Cambridge. Can we bring him into a slightly better team? Maybe, you know, I'm looking at teams who aren't maybe in the top six or sort of 10 places, but maybe the ones who are just existing a little bit higher than us now, who maybe might be looking at someone like McGrandles. But yeah, I mean, his impact has been brilliant. And as much as like we can talk about the game against Posh, and as much as we can talk about like how sort of emotions maybe won us the game, I think, and the fact that we just wanted it more than them, which is pretty evident on the pitch. Emotion is great, and obviously it did have a big impact, but I think just having someone like that who almost just kind of takes everything out of it and takes all the context of local derby and the sort of heated nature of it, particularly in an area of the park like that, was so crucial to the game against Posh yesterday. And, you know, you can kind of extrapolate that really to his whole time in the squad, because I think since he's come in, he's obviously been just kind of the quality of player that we've not really had in this level too much before. Because often it's been like, you know, with respect, players who maybe don't have the natural ability, who are trying really hard and working really hard, which is great and it's fine, but I think that takes you so far, and then you need players like McGrandles to come in and really help develop the club. So clearly mission one is to stay in the league, and we've given ourselves a really good opportunity to do that. And then the next bit is, how can we make sure that the situation that's happened this season doesn't happen next season. I think bringing McGrandles in permanently would be a big, big step to doing that, and obviously bringing 2 and 3 and 4 more players like that, and suddenly we've actually got a pretty good team. So we'll see. But obviously there's 5 cup finals to go yet, George, as you well aware. So we'll see.
Yeah, I absolutely loved what Bonner said about him in his post-match, if you saw that.
Oh, he said he's wicked.
He's absolutely wicked player. It's great. There's something great about that, I reckon. Anyway, look, another player that I think we want to talk about that... we had a question in from Jamie. Tom, I'll give this one back to you, because you're the one who's, as well as George, but he's got his own take on this player that I'm going to come to in a sec. Your shout for player of the season, apart from Jones, obviously, as he's just said there, is McGrandles. But Jamie's asked, will Liam Bennett win player of the season this year? And where do you think, for you, like where does he sit in, first of all, in that category? And secondly, yesterday, I mean, it was quite a big test for him up against Mason Clark, who I think only the once maybe managed to turn him in the first half, which was a huge chance. But where do you rate his performance yesterday, and sort of and how well has he done this season since he's been back at us? I mean, I think Walsall fans are probably giving player of the season, from what I see on Twitter, for them, for the first half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you can see how they've dropped off a little bit since he left. He obviously had a massive impact there, and he's kind of come in and just done exactly the same for us, I think. He's obviously a really, really good player. I think there's still a lot of aspects of his game that can improve a little bit. I think that 1v1 defending is something that can get better and probably will get better, particularly with experience. Mason Clark is probably one of the toughest opponents he'll come up against. I thought he gave him a busy afternoon, even if it wasn't, you know, it didn't result in goals or assists or anything like that. There was obviously that one time that you mentioned there where he sort of got around him and to be honest, should have scored.
Yeah, make no mistake about that. He's bottled that.
He's completely bottled
that.
Yeah.
That should be an attempt on goal and probably should be a goal.
He should be scoring.
He's just snatched it really early.
Yeah. He really should be scoring. They should have gone one up. Yeah, it changes the whole complexion of the game. But, you know, fine lines is a great man once.
Yeah, so I mean, there are obviously aspects of his game that can improve, but what's just so noticeable and so clear is what he brings to us going forward. Like, obviously sets up the goal gets the assist for Smith's goal, and it's been the sort of run that he's made literally time and time and time again since he's come back into the side. Every week, even though like he's been back now, more than 3 months, like every week I'm like, surely this guy is just going to get dominated like in the air, physically. All of that. And he just doesn't, like, he just competes so well for that sort of stuff. And, you know, again, like I was talking about when McGrandall's there, and it feels like because Bennett is our player, obviously contracted to us, like he will just definitely be here next season if we stay up. But I think he's another one. Like the trajectory that he's on and the development, which has basically been since sort of end of last season when he had sort of 2 and 3 appearances in the team, obviously played against Plymouth, I think it was, when he made his debut last season around a similar sort of time of the year. And like he's just suddenly become one of the most important players in our team. So there's going to be people looking at that and I think maybe a little bit of interest. But he's been phenomenal, really. Everything that you could have wanted for him coming back, you know, he's come into a completely different situation than he was at Walsall. So you wonder, can he just like carry on doing what he was doing? And obviously the answer to that has pretty emphatically been yes. And
do you know who else loves him, Tom?
Who else loves him?
Big Gab.
Big
Gab Sutton. I mean,
friend of mine.
Tom's talking about like people noticing him, and we give Gabriel Sutton grief, but he is a commentator on our level, right? He watches a lot of games and he notices a lot of things. And he was praising Bennett on Twitter earlier today, basically saying if we stay up, brackets when we stay up, Gab. If we stay up, he'll be one of the top fullbacks in League One next season.
Huge news, isn't it?
Huge.
Sort of,
you know, almost as big as Gab, who is massive.
Height-wise, you mean? Height-wise. What's your take on Bennett then? Because it sounds like it's kind of similar to Tom's in the.
I'm torn on Bennett. I have a lot of the feelings that Tom has there, and I think it's really important to mention that moment in the second half on Saturday. I think we were already 2-0 up. I think he turned about 3 or 4 Borough players and kept hold of the ball each time. A touch of the Wes about him, sort of.
Wow.
The way he was using
his
feet.
That's a massive comparison to make.
Wow. Just the way he was, right back.
just the way he was keeping hold of the ball and sort of dancing around.
I mean, in stature, I see what you're saying. You know, they're diminutive little figures. But
yeah, I think going forward, he's brilliant. The inverted Brophy ahead of him is working really well.
Yeah, that is working really well.
And, you know, I can't remember how many assists he's got now, but it was a brilliant assist for Smith. And he makes a lot of opportunities from either out wide, from sort of crossing there, or getting to the byline. Going forward, it is terrific. At the back, I do feel he has a touch of the Trent about him, where he's maybe not as good at that side as he is going forward. But like Tom says, he's young, he's got a lot to learn. He is getting better as the season goes on. Interestingly, I actually thought the first 30 minutes on Saturday, I thought Mason Clark had him on toast. I think he was getting behind him. I think you said once, Julian, I was like, oh no, I can count at least 3 or 4 times in my head, and not just that opportunity he missed. So it's not the first time we've seen him targeted. You know, the Ipswich goal came from his side, the Fleetwood goal came from his side. So it comes with the territory, right? Being good going forward does put you on the back foot, sort of in your sort of defensive duties. So that is, I don't know, I don't want that to sound as harsh as it perhaps it does, so I'm going to sip my Kool-Aid again and say he's brilliant and he's a real asset to the club, and hopefully he's here next season because he's the kind of player that you could build an 11 not maybe around, but like a key part of it.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Let's not bring
Where's my Kool-Aid?
Down. Yeah. I was going to say, let's not bring the tone down too much here. Let's not get critical after that yesterday. Let's crack on with a few of the positive aspects from yesterday. And one sort of quite general point, Tom, that we had a few questions on. This one from James. Was that the best atmosphere we've had at home? Or like, can you think of any better? I know we talked about the game itself, but the atmosphere yesterday was as good as I can remember it at the Abbey. We really got up for it. Is there any other game that sort of sticks in your head apart from you know the obvious candidates? And do you think how much do you think that actually helped the players get that result?
Yeah, I think massively. There was a big part of it, like we mentioned a couple of times, really, which is the fact that we just seem to be really a lot more driven than Posh. They looked so far off the pace, to be honest, yesterday, and you know, it was obviously a big contrast in the atmosphere that was coming from, well, I guess our three sides of the ground, because it wasn't just the NRE on yesterday. It was every single part of the ground seemed to be up and at them, which is something that we mentioned about last week, and obviously really good to see. And you know, and I will come on to talk about Will Norris, and he's obviously the obvious example of one of their players who just looked completely rattled by it, to be honest, and they just couldn't cope with it, which is not something that I think is like typical of the Abbey.
Yeah. This is the sort of the thing that surprised me about it. Let's talk about that Norris thing now, because I think that is the best example of it. Like, it's not something that we do a lot as a fan base, I don't think. It's not something that you don't see a really imposing, intimidating Newmarket Road then get into a goalkeeper's head that often. But yesterday, we were talking about before we recorded, that moment where the NRE kept the ball, you could sort of see it in his body language that he looked really rattled by it. Did it surprise you a bit, like the sort of ferocity of it?
Not really, to be honest.
not even from our fan base. See, I just often think that sometimes fan base, we're just a bit like, we can be a bit of a soft touch for things like that.
Yeah, we can be at times, but I think there aren't too many examples of times where players have done that move. I know he's not gone from one to the other. Obviously, he's taken a couple of stops along the way, including a very sizable period of his career, which seems to have just been wasted just sort of on a training pitch in like Burnley, rather than actually going out and doing anything productive. But yeah, I mean, look, clearly that absolutely rattled Norris. It did. You could see he probably wasn't expecting it to be like that either. So maybe there is something in it. But I was not really that surprised by someone who... We made him. I think that's fair to say. Like we gave him a career. It's for him to end up playing for Posh. I know that, you know, obviously he's not had many opportunities to play. So one comes up, he has to go and take it. I get that, but you know, at the same time, like, it is a local derby. Like there is going to be a big atmosphere, and if there's an obvious kind of pantomime villain in there, if it isn't Darren Ferguson, who got his own share of stick, it's fair to say, then it's obviously going to be someone like Will Norris, who just kind of has basically done what you shouldn't necessarily do as a footballer. I'm not saying that it's not something you should do in the sense that you can't be doing it, because I understand the reasons behind it, but as a fan, it feels like players that have played for your club should have like some sort of commitment to you. And he's obviously, you know, kept an eye on how the club's been doing. Like, you see him sort of interacting with players and sort of interacting over Twitter and stuff.
Handle still says forever are you.
Yeah.
Not anymore, mate. I think very much the NRE made that decision for him. But yeah, I mean, the atmosphere was, it was unbelievable. I think it really is just the obvious candidates for like Man United at home, playoff games that kind of compare to that. And that's exactly what it needed to be. I think there was also a part of it, which is, I think a lot of our players were a little surprised as well. Which is probably an even bigger thing. I wonder if there's a part probably in both squads where they didn't really understand the rivalry. They didn't really understand how sort of deep it is. And I mean, that game on Saturday, that's something that's going to teach everyone. It's like, I'm sure they'll take that with them. And hopefully next season it can be exactly the same.
Yeah,
if we're playing against each other.
Yeah.
And not two divisions apart again. Yeah. But unbelievable afternoon. I did just want to make a quick point as well, because I know we're talking a lot about, you know, these intangibles again, which has obviously been a theme of the pod really for like the last 3 years. I know, like, we're not always going to focus on stats and stuff like that, but maybe the thing that's kind of been forgotten a little bit, and stand us in good stead for the next couple of games, by the way, is the fact that, like, it's the first time we've beaten a team in the top six this season.
That's a good point.
You know, we obviously focus for quite clear reasons on the fact that we've won the derby, which is the big headline statement. But in terms of an actual result, like, it's probably our best of the season. Not just from the sense of, like, enjoying the game and the atmosphere and stuff, but actually to go out and beat a team who objectively are doing well this season and clearly have posed a lot of teams a lot of problems on a pretty regular basis. So to go out and actually beat a team like that and be so essentially comfortable in doing it. Comfortable might be a bit of a stretch, but it certainly wasn't like backs to the wall for the whole game. They obviously had a lot of the ball and stuff like that, and the game kind of went exactly as you'd expect it to go in that sense. But yeah, I think it's worth just kind of mentioning that the actual result itself in terms of the opposition that we played and you know, the actual task in hand is probably something that we've not really done at this level before. I know there are one or two examples of, you know, you go away to Wigan and get a bit of a freak result last season, and Ipswich, who, to be honest, I guess on paper weren't as good last season when we won at Portman Road as Posh are this season. So yeah, it's a pretty headline result for that as well, I think.
And it's not just that, they were the form team in the league coming into the actual game. George, was there you sort of started the pod off with that sort of chat on yesterday's performance? Is that something that really surprised you as well? Just the comfortableness of it. The ease at which we managed to get the 3 points.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like Tom says, it wasn't completely easy. You know, I think you could look at everyone that played and sit here and make a case for them being man of the match. I think the player that probably would get the least sort of argument made for them is Mitov, and even he made two terrific saves which kept us in it. So yeah, everyone's sort of smashing, you know, 8, 9, 10 out of 10 performances. I hadn't even thought about the fact that we've just beaten a team in the top six without conceding as well, Tom.
Should we get that in?
I mean, just perhaps it's just the mindset of not wanting to think the Borough are a top six team, but they are. They've got some very good players. Like you say, they are, over the last six, the form team of the moment. But also since Ferguson's come in, I think them and Ipswich are the top two for form. I think Borough had won like the last three away games. And I just think, you know, praise to sort of Bonner and the way that we set up, because the way they've got those wins away from home recently is they've done a lot on the counter, and he set the team up on Saturday to say, no, you're not having that. You've got to play through us. And they didn't fancy that. So they started hitting these long diagonal balls all afternoon. Yeah, some of them got in behind Bennett, like we were talking about a few moments ago. But for the most part, it was a professional, well thought out, well disciplined performance from us. And I think that in itself kind of lends itself to making us think it was easy for long stretches because of how we contained them, or how we sort of limited the chances that they had, and, you know, and how we kind of then sort of pressured them and forced them into sort of snatching at chances that they probably should have done better with.
Were you sort of, before the game, before the lineups came out, were you expecting us to go with a five? I know obviously we didn't know about Jones, but were you expecting us to go with a four?
Yeah, I thought we would go with the five in midfield, try and pack it out and try and sort of play on the counter ourselves and have people like Nibs and Lancaster just chasing people down and putting pressure on. I think we'll swap to the five when we go to Plymouth on Saturday. We mentioned Jones earlier in the pod. I think they've said after the game he had an injection in the groin, so he's going to miss the next two. So he won't be at Wickham and Plymouth away. So I don't know if that impacts how we play with the five, whether Okadina comes in or not.
I was just going to say, well, we saw him come on play for the first time in a while yesterday, so that's...
It's such a shame, isn't it, that there are certain players, when they do things, you just kind of have reputations. So if, like, Smith gets flagged offside, I just naturally agree with the linesman.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
you must be offside.
Yeah, yeah.
And Okadina, this season, I just feel like if there's a foul in the box, he has fouled him. So I've watched that penalty incident back. I think we got lucky, but sod it, we deserve a bit of luck.
I'm not sure we did get lucky, actually. I've watched it back a couple of times. I don't think there's much in it, but I know what you
mean. I think you're too busy celebrating and not watching.
Yeah, maybe.
I also think we should add a penalty in the first half ourselves as well. So
at the time, I was pretty surprised that it wasn't given. And
was that the incident or the person doing the foul though?
Oh, both. To
yeah. They definitely feed into each other.
Oh, was it Jobs? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think like it is an interesting point on Okadina, because. And it actually probably goes back to like Bonner's game management, really. And obviously it's not something that we've been able to praise on too many occasions this season. So it's worth doing it when we can.
Top the Kool-Aid up.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Another little top up in there. Lovely bit of ice as well.
Take a big old swig of the Kool-Aid. That's what I needed. Yeah, to prepare me for this. I think it was obviously a I guess it would have been a really tough decision about how to set up, especially when you know that Jones isn't going to be fit and available, and Bonner's choices there, I guess, you know, you go kind of like for like, and you just bring Okadina in for Jones, and Okadina provides you that kind of mobility at the back. Or do you just go with the two kind of experienced heads and just, you know, really trust in your structure and trust in your ability to just defend things coming into the box and coming in around them? And he got the call absolutely spot on. But what I thought was more impressive in his game management was the way that he kind of picked and chose his times to change things a little bit. Like, we obviously went 2-0 up, which was great. And I think it would have been very, very easy at that point to just then make the change. And, you know, obviously what happened is obviously what happens in these situations, because game state kind of dictates it. If you're 2-0 up, you naturally sit off a little bit more, and the onus is on the other team to come onto you a little bit. So if you do that straight after the second goal, which I think we could have easily have done, because you're like, right, shut up shop now, let's just get this, let's just kind of get this over the line. It then becomes like probably about half an hour of just constant pressure. Mm. And how many times have we seen it this season where that's just kind of resulted in us doing something stupid in the box, or, you know, just giving them any sort of in back into the game. But what he actually did was allow the game to kind of play out. We kept doing our thing for another sort of 10 or 15 minutes, and he made the change, I think, on the 80th minute. And then it's like, right, now we can just shut up shop, and all right, the pressure might come in, but we back ourselves to get through at least 7 or 8 minutes of it at 2-0. And even if they do score, it's probably going to be too little too late. So, yeah, obviously we have been critical of Bonner quite a lot this season. And it can be sometimes easy to forget like the magnitude of the game for him personally. Like, he's obviously a fan as much as anyone. He wants to get one over on them, you know, personally, I guess, as well as professionally. And I thought he got everything spot on. And he has done now for, I think, well, certainly the last 4 games. You know, obviously the points return has been 25% of our of our points for the whole season so far. So it's been a massive upturn. And, you know, his management of the team and selection and how we've set up and prepared for these games has been pretty much near on perfect. It's been a real throwback to last season and a real throwback to probably the promotion year as well. It just seems like everything he touches turns to gold in some ways. So yeah, I'd like to think we can keep that going. And you know, if he does do that, then he's going to make maybe a couple of us look rather silly, which I'm absolutely not against at all. Absolutely happy for that.
Here for that.
Absolutely here for that. The entire pod is begging for it, in fact. Well, good. I think we've summed up, you know, very diplomatically summed up that comprehensive 2-0 victory against those dirty little scumbags up the road. Let's move on to the previews of what's next, because it's absolutely far from being done. We've given ourselves a great chance. Next up on Tuesday night is Wickham. We don't have a recorded preview for Wickham, so we're just going to do a bit of a preview ourselves. Jordan, a team that I personally, I think like most United fans, hate playing. Mm-hmm. Tom mentioned this is the 2-0 win against Posh is our result of the season. A close second must be the reverse fixture at Wickham on that Tuesday night in October when we won 3-2. That came as a real shock at that time as well, which actually was followed by Posh, which is an interesting little bit of symmetry.
I'm worried about Tuesday night.
You've answered my question straight away.
I feel like there's a lot of... I think there's a couple of things. Number one, there's obviously the whole day after the Lord Mayor show potential that could happen for this. We had that last season after a couple of big wins. I'm more confident this season that Bonner will be sort of planning for it. We also have a better sort of depth squad, oddly, that we could rotate if we need to. So that's one element that I'm worried about. And then the other element is not that Wickham are a bogey team or anything like that, but just it feels like a lot of people have already written this game off as a win. Like, not just after the Borough result, but in the last couple of weeks when we've been looking at the final 5 or 6 games of the season, everyone sort of circled this one as a win. And I don't know, the complacency worries me. And then throw into the mixer the fact that Wickham are not out of the playoff picture. They're not exactly in the front seat. They lost on Saturday to Morecambe. They're going to be desperate to sort of rectify that. They will need something to get their playoff aspirations going again. And it's, you know, add all that into the mixer. I think Tuesday is not as straightforward as perhaps we all want it to be or think it should be, but
not straightforward as Saturday after that.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Because that's an easy one.
it's weird though, isn't it? The season, like Tom says, 5 cup finals left. You can kind of sort of draw a line, and it's this week coming up. So Wickham, and then the Plymouth game on the Saturday as part one. you get through that part with as many points as we can. Hopefully we get, you know, to 5 o'clock on Saturday and we are higher than Oxford, or we've got more points than Oxford, and it gives us the edge going into that second part, which is the quote unquote easier three games that both us and Oxford have for the remainder of the season. But yeah, a little bit apprehensive about Tuesday night.
Yeah, it's going to be a big week for the coaching staff to sort of get the players up for it. Exactly like you say, like the day after the Lord Mayor's show, it's going to be a lot to sort of...
I've taken that phrase from Tom.
Have you?
Yeah. I used that one a lot last year. I was like, that's a good phrase. I'm going to keep that.
Have that one. You should take clean sheets for a platform as well. Maybe I'll credit you with that one next time as well. Wickham's form, worth noting, isn't very good. They've only won one in their last six.
Oh, well,
six.
Then that's fine. So, I don't care. Right, I think scrap what I said.
Ignore everything George just said. Yeah.
They've won one in their last six, drawn two.
Lost to Morecambe.
And yeah, the only team they've beaten in that run is Forest Green, who are now officially relegated. Who did beat us? Yes, that's a good point.
Tuesday night will be an interesting one for lots of reasons, but obviously elsewhere around the division, Oxford are playing a team with basically the same profile.
Like, at home as well.
At home as well. Portsmouth are not out of the playoffs, but they're far from being in like the box seat for it. So it'd be a fascinating night, you know, if Pompey decide actually they do want to cling on to the playoffs and win, and Wickham just throw in the towel.
Yeah.
That'd be a lovely Tuesday night.
That would be a brilliant
Tuesday night. Enjoy that Tuesday evening.
Well, it's not a Gareth Ainsworth side anymore, so maybe that's, you know, a bit of that sort of bogey element in your head is gone away with that.
He's doing great in the Championship, isn't
he? He's doing really, really
well.
Doing
really great.
Another reason to stay up, by the way, potentially, down. Let's not go there yet.
I know it's a bit of a tangent, but did you see Gareth Ainsworth made his new QPR team do the hacker?
Yeah, I did see that.
It's just so David Brent. It's almost like he's trying to do it as well. It's not even like just a bit of a coincidence that he keeps doing this stuff and makes him look a bit stupid, but yeah, just thought I'd get a little dig in there while I can.
any opportunity for Brent reference as well. After that, we've got the sort of, you know, the easy fixture of the two, as Jordan might say, and I think a lot of people are sort of got a weird feeling about this one. But just before we hear what Jordan Tom think about it, Swindle had a chat with Chris from Plymouth Live.
Well, first of all, Jack, I remember the game up at the Abbey Stadium in December, and it was tight, it was close. Cambridge could have nicked it. You know, as I think you see a lot of the times in League One, wouldn't expect there to be a lot between the two teams down at home park. Cambridge seemed to have picked up fantastically in the last... Was it 10 points from the last four games? So that's a real big improvement for them. So, you know, depending on how the team's getting on in midweek, it's shaping up to be a good game, important, very important for both teams. Who to watch out for? Argyle. They've had a few injuries and issues that they've lost the goalkeeper, Michael Cooper, who I would argue is their best goalkeeper. He suffered a torn ACL in early February, and that's opened the door for Callum Burton to come in and become Argyle's regular keeper. And of course, Callum Burton, I know, was a promotion winner with Cambridge a couple of years ago. He'd been the backup keeper at Argyle for basically 18 months. And then Michael Cooper, who I rate extremely highly, is one of the best young keepers in the whole of the EFL, suffered a bad knee injury at the start of February. And Callum's come in and played ever since. So I think it's 12 successive league starts. He also played in the Papa John's Trophy final at Wembley. And he's had to come in, you know, tricky circumstances to replace somebody so highly rated. And he's done a pretty decent job. Argyle have been able to maintain their position with him coming in. And he kept another clean sheet on Saturday at Exeter. So he's been doing well. Former Cambridge player, as I say. Won promotion with you two years ago. So the attacking option, Shaq, the main one is Ryan Hardy, 17-goal top scorer, although he has gone for a little bit of a barren patch. And when Argyle played Exeter on Saturday, they actually went with Niall Ennis and Sam Cosgrove, who's on loan from Birmingham, as their two strikers. So difficult to say this far out from the game, but normally when Argyle play one up front, it's Ryan Hardy. If they go to two up front, it could be Ennis and Cosgrove again. So there's attacking options for them there. And in midfield, Danny Meyer is always a key player for them. Doesn't get enough goals for the ability that he has, but he has the creative technical skills to open up defences. So Danny Meyer often is the creator, the provider for chances. And then it's Hardy, who's got 17 goals this season. Cosgrove's got 12. Ennis has got 10. So they've shared the goals around quite nicely between the three strikers. So you get them and Danny Meyer and then Callum Burton in goal. You know, that's the sort of spine of your team going through that's served them fairly well this season.
Brilliant. Well, that sounds it sounds interesting. It sounds like Cambridge could be against some pretty good strikers. But yeah, we're always good at conceding goals, so you'll probably get a chance at least one or two.
Well, like I say, we're getting to the crunch time now, aren't we? And sometimes I think once you get to this stage, it's almost not so much down to playing ability. It's about temperament, isn't it? Mm. And sometimes teams can have a really strong finish almost out of the blue, because they've got the right characters in the team. They can respond to the challenge. They can raise their game. You know, all teams have played 40-plus games this season. A lot of players will be carrying knocks and injuries. Some players won't be playing as well as they were early in the season. Argyle have had a fantastic home record this season. They've basically won every game this season. And Lincoln came down on Easter Monday. Argyle were off. Lincoln played extremely well and they went away with a deserved 2-0 win. So I'm sure the form book says Argyle to win when Cambridge come down, but I'm not convinced. You know, Sheffield Wednesday went to Burton on Saturday and got beat and deservedly so by all accounts. So it's on any given day. You know, Argyle will be favourites, but they would be foolish to underestimate Cambridge, who look as though they're having a real go at getting the points they need to stay up.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Chris. Thanks for joining us and good luck with getting promoted.
And good luck with staying up, Jack.
So there we go. Thanks very much for that, Chris.
And Jack.
Yeah. This game, Tom, there is a sort of strange thing happening amongst people, you know, United fans that I've spoken to, where I think sort of everyone is weirdly expecting us to do something at Plymouth. And there's this expectation that because a lot of the pressure's on them, and we sort of come as plucky little underdogs, we can little old Cambridge our way to a point or three. The tricky ewes. How are you feeling about it?
It's a pretty daunting task, isn't it? It's a pretty daunting day out as well. So far away.
It really is.
We've mentioned it a couple of times, and it is a bit of a weird thing, because you're right. I've got the sense that something, like, we are going to get something from Plymouth, but I don't really know why. They're top of the league, like bearing down the championship, and you know you keep expecting them to fall away a little bit, and they just haven't. So obviously, fair credit to them. I think basically,
I think it's because if we were in their position, we would definitely lose that game.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly what I was about to say.
Well, it's the Stevenage game, right, in the promotion season.
Yeah,
same feeling to it.
My perception of how games are going to go is informed purely by what happened at the end of the promotion season.
Yeah.
So I'm now like, there's no way a team is just going to easily get over the line. They will stutter and splutter and drop points to crap teams. Maybe we're not so crap anymore, but they are going to drop points to teams they shouldn't do until they just scrape themselves over the line, because that's just how it works. But there is also the very real possibility that they are actually quite good and they will just get things done fairly casually. Obviously, they had a big derby win themselves at the weekend. So, you know, let's see. I hate to keep rolling out the same old cliches every week, but we can't be looking at Plymouth just yet. Got to focus everything on Wickham. But, yeah, I mean, Plymouth's a massive task. And I guess, although there is maybe a sense from a few people that it's just a game where we might go there and do something a bit unexpected, I think a lot of people, if you're doing the predictors, would have it down as a loss. So it's obviously, you don't really want to say it, but it kind of feels like anything from Plymouth would be a bonus. But
don't say free hit.
Say free hit, Thomas. There's only five games left.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll see. I mean, look, pressure does strange things to teams. You know, look at ourselves. Like, it looked all but dead and buried, and then the pressure's on suddenly, and we start performing. At the top end of the table, you do often see little wobbles happen. So, fingers crossed, they can save that one for Saturday. And yeah, we'll come away 3 points richer, and 6 points richer after the Wickham game. And
God, that's too much Kool-Aid. Yeah. Someone take the Kool-Aid off him.
I'm a bit of a sugar rush now.
That crash is going to be unbearable.
Do you know, on Tuesday night, do you know our form against Wickham is pretty decent? Mm-hmm. I haven't lost to them home or away since February 2017.
Good, due one then.
Do you mean Plymouth?
Due one. Against Plymouth, sorry, what did I say?
Wickham.
I meant Plymouth.
That's why I'm so surprised. You're like, our form against Wickham isn't that bad.
Our form against Wickham is absolutely terrible.
I think you will
terrible.
Find it is awful. Not this season, though.
Not this season, though. So, look, we'll see. As Tom says, I think they'll just be focusing on Tuesday night and not thinking about Plymouth just yet. And if it's our second to last home game of the season, Wickham, so it does feel like quite a big game. But I think Jules made quite some very good points on why we shouldn't be thinking that we can just stroll away to those 3 points. In a sort of like general sense, after Saturday, let's talk a bit about where you guys are at with your general relegation thoughts. Mark's asked, can you be a bit more positive about our chances now after today's results? That's the first question. And the second part of it is from Ollie. How many points do you feel United can get, and what is the figure needed to be safe from relegation? So firstly, Jord, I'll come to you. Mm-hmm. You feeling positive? And secondly, what is that total you think we need to get to?
I feel like that website, was it Experimental 361? It's kind of nailing my emotions quite well. So it's got us, what, 52% chance to go down or to stay up?
52% to stay up, 52% chance to go up.
Sorry, Julian, I don't mean we're going up, mate. 50% to go down.
To go down. Yeah, 95% 17 days ago before the Vale game.
Exactly. That huge swing sums up exactly where I am. And I'm still on that kind of sort of 50-50 point where I'm not sort of like, yeah, we've definitely done it. We're definitely staying up. But yeah, like I said, if we can navigate these next two games, come out of it with a better points tally than, say, Oxford or Port Vale or even MK, it will start to kind of feel like it's quote unquote in our hands a little bit.
What do you think that points tally is, by the way?
Right, so Bonner said 47 not that long ago.
Even just from the next two, what do you think we need from the next two to, what's a minimum in your head? Surely we've got to win one of them. Maybe we don't. It just puts a lot of pressure on that last three.
I think 2 points might be okay. From the next two. I would definitely. Yeah, I think obviously three would be better and four would be great. But
would it be better, three?
Yeah, then even so better, then that would be six. And, yeah,
yeah. Right, yeah.
If we got two, I wouldn't be too distraught. But yeah, I feel like a win says so much more, doesn't it? It's not just the points thing, it's like a mindset thing. Like if I was a Port Vale fan or as an Oxford fan and I'd just, from nowhere, this team that had done, you know, one of the bottom four written off, possibly one of the bottom two written off, all of a sudden have just bought, what, three wins and a draw in the last four games, I'd be bricking it. So if it's the statement of getting wins. So yeah, hopefully over the next two games, one of them is a W, because that says it does more than just sort of the points on the board, if you get me.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. The sort of for the other teams, the mentality shift from them looking at us. Yeah,
and obviously the momentum that it keeps going in the squad.
Yeah, of course. Tom, where do you stand on it? And How positive are you feeling after Saturday? And what's that total for you, do you think? Is it 47? Do you think that would do it?
I think if we're looking at 7 points for the last five, I think, to be honest, I think ideally you'd be targeting a few more now.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I
agree. So, no, I didn't finish that point. Like, Bonner said 47 a few weeks ago. I think it's probably
it's
more like a 48.
It must have changed. 48, 49. I'd be looking, I think you'd just be targeting to carry on how we have been. I know it's a lot easier said than done, but you know, we've put ourselves in a position where we've got five games left. We're on 40 points. The ultimate target is 50. Like, why not aim for that? Like, let's. I know, again, that's really, really idealistic. And clearly, we could aim for 55.
Why don't we aim for 55?
But I think a really interesting thing is going to be trying to think of the way to articulate this. But before the Port Vale game, right, we were 7 points adrift.
Yeah,
and that is kind of pressure on territory, but it almost feels like it's done already. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's very not easy, because obviously we've got some really good results against a couple of very good teams over the last sort of 3 weeks. But it feels like chasing is maybe a little easier than where we are now, which is like, how do you play this? Like, let's say, for example, Wickham, let's say it's 0-0 at 85 minutes. How hard are we pushing for a winner? Is that sort of
That's a good point.
Dilemma, I think.
That's a good point.
So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how we manage this sort of last part of the season. And especially, let's say, after Tuesday, you know, it's obviously a very real possibility now we could be out of the bottom four. That puts a completely different emphasis on it because you're no longer doing the chase and you're now being chased. And, you know, that obviously does, like we've just mentioned, pressure does interesting things to people and does interesting things to football teams, particularly towards the end of the season. So as much as a really good spot we put ourselves in, it does kind of give us a very different challenge. I would, in terms of the next two games specifically, I would very much not like us to just be relying on those last three games because Accrington are going to have something to fight for. Burton, obviously less so, and obviously Forest Green are just going to be fighting for pride, and that sometimes can be a really powerful thing.
And you just talked about that pressure, playing bottom of the league already, already relegated at home last game of the season, like no pressure on them, like all the pressure on the home team. It's got Harrogate written all over it, hasn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, I think from like a Cambridge perspective, I mentioned it a moment ago, but like beating Posh, that's the first time we've beaten a team who are currently occupy the top six spaces in the league. All season, we've also got a really good point at Bolton, who are also in the top six. So these are teams that we traditionally struggle to get points off that we now have put a couple of good results together against. We're obviously playing Wickham, who are obviously a very similar position, and then Plymouth. So like, there's no reason not to be confident that these next two games can't yield points. And if you beat Wickham, like it does take a little bit of pressure off that Plymouth game, and that maybe plays into our hands a little bit. But yeah, I think it's really impressive how we've made just a really good go of this season, to be honest, more than anything. I know it's like a really general point, but there was a real possibility and it looked like it was going to happen. This season was going to drift and drift and drift, and it was literally just, when is it going to be that we're going to get relegated? Yeah. And it now feels like...
End of season. End it now.
I thought you were saying we're going to get relegated at the end of the season.
Yeah, that is the traditional time to be relegated.
I was quoting us from the other week.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of people at the club deserve a lot of credit for, well, I guess not really decision making, but just keeping fairly calm in those situations. And look, we're not at a point yet where we can say definitively we were wrong about Mark Bonner not being able to keep us up. You know, clearly it's early days for that sort of thing just yet, but I didn't see this sort of turnaround coming. I don't think there was probably before that week where we played Pompey, MK and Morecambe, I didn't feel like there was any real tangible reasons like cling on to hope and think this is going to get better instantly. So it does feel like it's been a real, real turnaround. And I think that's something that a lot of people deserve a lot of credit for. But, you know, fundamentally, the result on Saturday is obviously a bit different because it's a derby and it means a lot for other reasons. But fundamentally, this run of form is meaningless if we go down, you know?
Yeah.
We've put ourselves in a really good spot and just got to capitalise on it now. I think in terms of the league, you know, we've obviously talked a little bit about it sort of, you know, following the game yesterday and just before we started recording today. But in a weird way, I'm always looking less at Oxford and MK. I'm just looking at Port Vale.
Yeah.
I'm thinking just catch them because...
So we were talking about this last week as well, weren't we?
You know, we obviously played them recently ourselves. We saw what an absolute mess they looked like when we played them. They were absolutely atrocious. And since then, they've managed to pick up loads of red cards and loads of injuries. And they've got a fairly tough looking running themselves. So I think...
Four reds in three games.
I think they're the ones that we want to be gunning for. And I know that they've got basically 6 point head start on us. They've got a game less, and I'm be fairly confident that we'd be able to get at least six more points than them from the five than what they'll get from their four.
You know, what's their goal difference? It'll
be fairly similar, and it's a point that our good friend Matt Casper likes to make quite a lot. But if we catch them up in terms of points, we will override whatever there is already in goal difference, because obviously we live...
But there's not many clubs
above
us.
Goals.
There's not many clubs above us that are that bad off. No.
Certainly Oxford aren't one of them.
Oxford's goal difference is very good. So they've essentially got that extra point. You know, that's exactly why they're above us at the moment.
And obviously I said it on the... said it on the pod last week and was roundly laughed at, I think, by saying MK were catchable, but MK are definitely catchable as well. So I think really it's a straight shootout between, well, Morecambe are probably gone because they just don't have enough games left to play. Then you're looking at Accrington, they're obviously only a couple of points behind ourselves. So I think it's two from Vale, MK, Oxford, ourselves and Accrington, and we'll see who that can be. But yeah, I mean, like we've said a couple of times, just because of the fixtures we've got, it does feel like it's in our own hands a little bit. And I don't know whether that makes me happy or makes me quite terrified, because I've seen what happens when Cambridge United have things in their own hands in the past, and it does no tend to end well. But no.
It's not ever done the comfortable way, is it? Or the easy way in those situations.
Hopefully this team's made a slightly different stuff, but we'll see.
Just on MK, they are unbeaten in seven now, which is something that worries me a bit. I mean, I know they conceded a last minute equaliser yesterday to Cheltenham, which helps us out a lot, but I think you've sort of summed that up really well there, Tom. Quite frustrating as well, George, that with the points tally we have at the moment, would have kept us up last year, even with the...
I know, we were in the pub after the game on Saturday and I said that to you and you're like, cheers.
That's, yeah, nice one,
I just had to bring the tone down, yeah. Sorry.
No, it's all right, mate. We've got to say, we've got...
Is that just like a sign of how bad the league was last year, though?
Probably, yeah, probably. I'm gonna come to both of you now and ask for your... I want you to map out the next five games, mm-hmm. and the points, what you guys think we're going to get, and whether you think that will keep us up or not for each game. Predict all the results down, recorded on a podcast, so you can never, we can never, no, we've got it there forever, you know, like that prediction is there. But just before I do that, just to wrap up the another sort of statistical summary of our improvement recently, Matt Caswell did this bit of research this morning, seemingly instead of looking after his child, which was comparing our BST versus GMT form. I'm talking about time zones there. It is quite remarkable. In Greenwich Mean Time, we're bottom of the league, 2 wins, 5 draws, 11 points. And in BST, 9 wins, 2 draws, and a total of 29 points, 1.38 points per game. So
those summertime years.
Do we just petition a summer league?
Well,
something?
Jokes aside, I don't think we should be changing the clocks anyway. So right. This is just, I'm just adding.
This is a whole tangent.
I'm just adding this to my case file now.
This
for
is
not
a running
changing
order,
it.
I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah.
The most is running order.
The pros and cons of GMT. Right.
Let me
really
just grab this tinfoil hat. We shouldn't change the clocks, and this is just another reason for it.
Is it all right to be cynical and just get a dig in for a moment and say maybe
about
it's just,
me or about
no,
the
sorry,
clocks?
Sorry, no, not about you.
You've had good. Yeah, get it in then.
You've had enough for one day. Is there something to be said that maybe we just don't fancy it when it gets a bit cold?
Maybe.
When the pitch is a little bit dug up.
Maybe, too many of them.
Yeah, something like that.
Let's just go through these last five games because I'm interested to see your predictions for the games before we wrap up. I'm going to go game by game. I'm going to come to each of you and I'm just going to keep a tally of your answers. So Wickham at home on Tuesday. George, let's go with you first. I want a scoreline as well, by the way.
I'm really torn on this one.
Well, don't be talking for too long because we are...
This is such a long pod, isn't it? Sod it. Let's go 2-1 Cambridge.
2-1 win. Jord. Tom, the other one.
Nice, big, nervy 1-0 win, I reckon.
Okay. Jord, Plymouth.
We've got to lose at some point. So, yeah, let's go 1-0
Plymouth. 1-0
Plymouth.
Jord?
Might as well be there.
Stop calling him by my name.
I've done that twice now. Because I'm looking at your name on the running order.
Fucking relegate you for that, mate.
Yeah, I think as much as I would love it to be an illogical thing that happens, I think if we're going to have a loss, we might as well make it top of the league.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, get a loss in to sort of...
What scoreline,
Tom? Final three.
Oh, I don't know. 3-0.
Okay. Where's that cool leg gone? Give it back to him.
This is the rush. This is the crash.
Yeah. Aki away, Jord. I did mean you that time.
1-1.
Okay.
Pressure on Aki, I think. So I could see us sneaking it, but I'll go 1-1.
Thomas?
I think we'll get a point at Accrington, yeah.
Score
1 point, 1-0.
Another 1-0.
Score as
by
well.
The way, Tom is going to leapfrog me for the first time in Moosenet. Well.
Is he?
Yeah, well, I'm definitely getting relegated from Division 2 and Tom's smashing it. So
you never know.
I've literally just given him all the fuel to blow his own promotion party here. Yeah. Do not follow me.
It's that sweet, sweet attendance percentage, mate. Yeah. That's what's doing it for me.
Burton?
I'm going to go for another draw.
Scoreline?
4-4.
Wow. You got the, is that the Harry?
Chucking a four.
No wonder you're getting relegated from Moosenet, mate.
It's just going to be a crazy summer evening.
It's Harrogate all over.
I think we'll be 4-2 down and draw 4-4.
Okay. Tom?
This is getting loopy, isn't
7
it?
7-all or something.
It's difficult predicting scores in a run of games, isn't it? I've long since had a good feeling about the Burton game. I don't know why. This is what I've got a funny feeling about more so than Plymouth. I think we'll go down and win with relative comfort. So I'll go... 2-0.
2-0 win.
Yeah.
FGR?
We'll win that. 2-1.
Great. Tom?
Yeah, I'll go the same.
2-1 win. God, you guys are going to be inseparable.
So I've got us, what, with 8 more points?
So you've got us 3, 5, 8.
We've gone for the same results, right? So
and Tom,
no, you've gone for an extra win.
Tom's got an extra win. So Tom's got 10 points. So Tom's got us finishing on
50. Big time.
Surely that keeps us up, 50 points.
50 will keep us up because...
Vale aren't going to win and draw a game. No. It's just not like the form that they're on now. And Jord's 48 points.
That keeps us up because Vale are going to get one more point.
I think it keeps us up because I don't think Vale are going to win another game.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to draw two. But I do think that will be a nervy last day. Mm-hmm. By the way, if you're winning at Burton, I think would be by the last day. Not safe mathematically, but I think... Not just even in our own hands, like we could lose and still stay up.
At what point do you tell everyone that you are leaving the country?
I've already said it.
For the last couple of games, yeah.
That's why I'm... Look, do you want to hear my predictions?
Go for it.
3-0 win against Wickham, 4-0 win against Plymouth, and a 5-0 win against Accrington. And we're up before I fly off to California. And I'm sitting on a beach in LA, not bothered about the football at all.
Interesting to note that...
Chatting about League 2 with Robin Ryan.
what I predicted there, which is essentially 10 points for our remaining 5 games, is basically... just the same as what we've just done in the last 5 games. So if we replicate that, we'll stay up. That's basically it. And that sounds really... Let's just do that then.
Just do that. Let's wrap this pod up as it's a bit long. All the questions we've got on...
Plus the pub is shut, so we need to leave.
Yeah, we should leave the pub. All the questions we've had... first of all, thank you everyone for sending all your questions this week. We've got loads of questions, so do keep sending them through every week. And we did have quite a lot... around our thoughts on Bonner and how they've changed. I think we're going to save them till the sort of relegation picture is slightly more firm, because I think that's a big part of this answer.
The humble pie is in the oven. It's not fully cooked yet.
It's not fully cooked, but I'll be honest, I'm buzzing to eat that humble pie. Yeah. I've got a real taste for it. George, thank you very much, mate. What a brilliant week.
It's been lovely to drink the Kool-Aid with you both. See you soon.
Drink the Kool-Aid in person again soon, Tom?
Yeah, I hope so.
Brilliant. Yeah. He didn't even end up in HMP Parkside last night, so that's good. Success all round.
Good time, had by all.